24/7 Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. I hope you're having a great day out there taking over the world on this beautiful Monday, the 16th. It is cold here in the South, and I just saw this in the news, and I guess I'll share it. It is Blue Monday. Do you know what that is? Blue Monday. I had not heard of it. I've heard of Black Friday and all of the other things, but this one was new to me. Blue Monday is the saddest day of the year. People are more sad today than any other day. That's really weird. I don't know why that is. The article says some things, you know, it's the deep of winter, and so there's the rhythms of the earth and the moon and all of that. That creates it, and the days are shorter, and people are still depressed about the holidays, and they've already given up on their resolutions, and they feel bad about that, and they are just generally sad, right? All of these things add up to maybe the bills are starting to come in, a day where we are the saddest in the year. And so, well, first, let me say this. I'm sad today. I'm a little bit sad. My family is on vacation and I'm not. I'm here at home working on the 16th, Monday the 16th, Martin Luther King Day, which is a vacation day for us here in Georgia. And a lot of places it's not. But here in Georgia it is. And so my family went on vacation and they're out skiing for the weekend and visiting some friends and stuff like that. And I stayed here to take care of all the pets and the everything. It's just, anyway, I stayed here. And so I miss them, and I'm a little bit sad about that. And so I'm a little bit sad myself, and I can understand when anyone is sad. That is a part of life and a huge part of being an entrepreneur. We have to battle through that all of the time. And there is no easy solution except to keep fighting the fight and to keep pushing on. You know, we're not going to kill ourselves, right? And so we have to buckle up and fight on. And I hate that answer. I wish there was a better answer, but that is the only answer, is to fight on. And hopefully you have someone you can rely on and fall back on. I have my beautiful wife, Megan. She is amazing. And I can certainly share myself. Oh, wait, she's not here. But I do have her a telephone call away. If you don't have someone like that, go find someone like that at church, go hire a coach, do whatever it takes so that you do have a shoulder to lean on. Those sort of people are just absolutely necessary in life. And on Blue Monday is a good day to reach out to them and, you know, get some help if you need it. It's also a great day just to reach out to your friends and say, hey, I appreciate you. Thanks for being part of my life. Thank you. You know, that's a good thing to do in response to a bad day as well, is reach out to the friends, the colleagues you do have, and express some gratitude to them. And always do that. Always have gratitude. It is infinitely worse. I was reading the news and saw an article about a deaf, dumb, blind woman who was lost. I was, oh my God, imagine that. It could be so much worse. Could be going to jail tomorrow, like the Chrisleys are, the reality TV stars from here in town. I think are supposed to be in jail tomorrow or a couple of decades for their massive frauds. We've had a lot of entrepreneurs convicted recently and indicted most recently, of course, the The electric truck company CEO was indicted. Anyway, you're not that guy. Things are looking good, you know, could be worse. The idea of being an entrepreneur is that we're going to fight on no matter what the circumstances. And I have to do that on my sad days or days when business is not looking up for me. I have to say, you know what? I didn't get that day. Today's not going to be a good day, but tomorrow is. And I, as an entrepreneur, am willing to get 99 rejections to get that 100th yes. And so that is where we are. Anyway, despite all of that, I have an absolutely fantastic show for you today. We are going to get in a good space, I promise. We have Mac Atrum up, and no one's better to talk about this than he is. He is the Millionaire Moment guy. We're going to talk about how thought controls your destiny and how money and how you think about money is important to your life and career. And so this whole mental piece is very important with our first guest. And so I'm excited that this segues perfectly into a conversation with Mac Atrum in just a second. We also have up today Chris Homewood. He is dirt cheap. He is the guy behind ilovedirtcheap.com. It's an amazing retail story. They buy all of the stuff that you and I return at Christmas. They buy and sell it into the system. We're going to learn about that business. So great show today. Appreciate you being with us. And we're going to get started like right now. Here we go. Sell. Bye.
Startups Radio hopes you will reach out to us if you have any questions or comments, or if you need help with your business at any stage, from concepts to exit. Jim accepts all connections on LinkedIn. He tweets from @EntrepreneurJim, and he responds to emails at james.beach@att.net. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the show.
We are back, and yes, I still do really appreciate you being with us today. I am very excited to welcome my first guest. His name is Mac Atrum. He is author of a new book called The Millionaire Moment, How Your Thoughts Shape Your Financial Destiny. He has an amazingly impressive resume and background. He is the CEO and founder of Mindspace Business Growth, which is a coaching business helping people achieve their financial and lifestyle goals. You know, when you say he's a coach, listen to this. He was the executive coach of the year for the United Kingdom at the APCTC Awards and business mentor of the year, trainer of the year finalist. He is also author of Face It and Fix It and The Power of Masterminding. He has appeared in all of the big places, Forbes, Guardian, Real Business, Huffington Post, and has appeared on stage with Kiyosaki, Ecker, Les Brown, James Caan, some of the other big names. Mac, welcome to the show. How you doing?
I am doing awesome. Thank you for inviting me onto the show. It's a real great pleasure to be here.
It is our pleasure. All right. Excellent. We think about sex 32 times a day or something like that. Do we have time to have thoughts about our financial destiny?
Absolutely. Yes, I agree.
So what are we thinking about our financial destiny? What do my thoughts have to do with it?
Your thoughts are everything to do with your financial destiny. You know, in the book, The Millionaire Moment, I talk about how I came from very broke. At one point, I was over $100,000 in debt and money that I owed other people, and struggling financially in my first business, so a small business, a computer company. And what I didn't realize is I had an unconscious, even subconscious negative thoughts around money. And I wasn't managing my money very well. And, you know, I was the kind of person, anyone wanted money, I'll borrow it and lend it to them or give it to them. and I was struggling financially, and I didn't know why I was on this constant rat race. And when I realized that it really is to do with my thoughts, and how I think about money, how I manage money is everything. And in the book, I talk about the natural laws of the universe. I talk about the law of vibration, the law of attraction, the law of resonance. And the way you treat money will come back in bucket loads in a positive way or negative way. So I talk about, for example, I talk about a law of sowing and reaping. If you treat money in a certain way and sow it in a way that it's going to reap rewards for you, that's what's going to happen. But if you squander money, again, money will stay away from you. So it's important to understand we live in a world where some people have what I call a poverty thinking, poverty mindset, and others have a more of a wealth thinking mindset. And those two are in duality. They are polar opposites. And the thinking affects both areas, if that makes sense.
All right, so what should I be thinking? Is it okay to want money and to like money? What are my thoughts supposed to be?
Yeah, very good. So your thoughts around money has got to be, first of all, when I actually expand it further more than money, but I talk about wealth. And if you agree with yourself that it's okay to be wealthy, then that creates a different emotional experience than those people who usually have this constant mantra, which is, oh, I can't believe it. This month I'm broke. This week I'm broke. I just don't have enough money to pay for this. I just don't have enough money to pay for that. That is that's poverty thinking. And poverty thinking falls into seven key areas. One is, when it comes to creating wealth or becoming rich, most people have never wanted that badly enough. So if you want to become a millionaire, if you want to be wealthy, and if you don't associate that with wealth, you think that is negative, it'll keep you in where you are. The second thing is, most people are stuck in the comfort zone. I am okay. I've got this job. I'm doing okay. That's all I want. Then that's fine. That's poverty thinking. And if you say, look, I want to be wealthy, and you have that kind of mindset, it'll keep you where you are. The third thing is, some people have thoughts which I call mind viruses. Mind viruses. In other words, they are consumed by popular culture or television and media. And there's lots of negative connotation around being wealthy. So, for example, you see news media, wealthy people are greedy. There's this other person's been arrested for this, this other person's been arrested for that. And the association often is it's negative. But a lot of the wealthy people I know, including myself, are very charitable. They're giving. And so these are mind viruses. The fourth thing is, sometimes what happens at times is, for most people, their financial set point is too low. So let's say they've always earned $100,000 a year. But suddenly they want to earn $1 million a year. Unless they change their thinking around that, they'll always stay at $100,000 a year. So it's a different kind of thinking. The fifth point is, often they're not aware that their hidden subconscious thoughts are actually running their life. So if you look at your life and think, well, financially, I've never been well off. Financially, I've always been around this area. This I've never been able to break above this ceiling. It's because there are negative thoughts, and I'll go deeper into what the science is around these negative thoughts in the book. The sixth thing is, you're not connected to what I say is the financial environment. Most people are, unless you're born in a house where there is wealth and there's lots of constant talk about wealth, what happens is the environment is set up in a way that automatically you associate wealth with negativity. And the last point on the poverty thinking is, you often, some people treat becoming a millionaire or wealthy as painful. And if you associate that with pain, or in order to become wealthy, I've got to work hard. I have to work 24 hours, 7 days a week, and I'll never see my kids. I'll never see my family. They associate that with pain. Now, these are the poverty thinking mindset. Now, I can easily go down the wealthy thinking mindset, if you like, there,
please,
Jim, in terms of what you said. Yeah, because what you said is, what should I be thinking? Well, here's some quick clues. Again, there's seven on the other side. Number one, the wealthy thinking habit, number one, is start to develop an emotion and a positive emotion around money. So when you see someone who is wealthy, or you walk past that car, that fabulous BMW or the Ferrari or the Lamborghini, bless those people. Think, I don't know how they acquired their money, but good on them. That creates a positive reaction in you rather than a negative, like, oh, I bet they did this, or the negative. Number two, have certainty. Say, once you're okay with yourself to say, yes, I want to be wealthy. Yes, I want to be a multimillionaire. Then put a goal together, a plan together to get you there, and have certainty within yourself that you will get there. It takes time, but you are willing to do whatever it takes to get there. Number three is have absolute clarity on what you want. What is that number? Is it 10 million in terms of net assets or net worth? Is it 1 million in terms of net worth? Is it 200,000 earning each year? But have clarity and write it down that that's what you want. And that's a wealthy thinking habit. Number four, now, once you have that clarity, it's time to take action on it. You have that clarity. I want to have $10 million in net assets or $10 million net worth. Then what action are you going to take each week, each month, in order to get there? And for some people, it's going to be deciding to create a wealth vehicle. You're going to decide to start a real estate business or invest in stocks or cryptocurrency. But always get the education first, I always say to people. Number five is be positive around money. Be positive around wealthy people. Have that air of positivity always, and that's a wealthy thinking habit. Number six is a big one there, Jim. Number six is gratitude. And I talk about this in the book. Gratitude being, be grateful for what you have right now. Because if you are grateful for what you have right now and every single day, the more you acquire, the more you have, the more you can give to others, which I highly, highly recommend. And the more wealth you have, you're grateful anyway. So you're not always searching, always looking, but you're grateful for what you have. And number seven, in terms of wealthy thinking habit, is think big. I have a friend, Jim, and he says that if you are going to think, you might as well think big. It's going to take you the same amount of time. Hope that helps there, Jim.
There are some great ones in there. I love that. I love the gratitude. I love action, clarity, all of it. Mac, what do you say to the person who says that, you know, all of this sounds great, but it's just a lot of words? You have action as one of your points in here, but I don't have a problem with the way I think about money. I love money. I just don't have my idea yet, or I just haven't found my path yet. Or, you know, there's all sorts of excuses that are not money-based. You know, I'm just too busy with my kids, whatever. What are your thoughts on the other bucket of excuses?
Yeah, I mean, these are, again, negative thinking and negative habits. Now, if someone says, Mac, I want to become a multimillionaire, and I say, okay, by when? And they say, well, within the next 3 years. Okay, so you've made that decision. Once you've made that decision, anything outside of that that doesn't move you forward towards that, it's like you said, it's an excuse. I can't do this because of my kids. I can't do this because I can't leave the house. There are a myriad of ways of actually making that dream come true, that goal come true. So you've got to understand that most people are subconsciously programmed to think negatively and make excuses. So in the book, I talk about the science of of dealing with that. And part of that is actually having time to quieten the mind, to sit and relax and start dreaming about what you want. And on one side, this is what I want. On the other side, these are the limitations. These are the things that are going to get in my way. And now you can now ask for help. Once you know what your limitations are, you can ask for help. So read my book, The Millionaire Moment, or read other success books or financially successful books or wealth books. Get yourself a coach or a mentor, someone ideally who's already been there, who can hold you accountable to your own excuses and your stories that are holding you back. So the decision is, this is what I want. Once you've made that decision, then realize that you've got to work towards it, and it's not going to just come and land on your head. There's something you have to do in order to get it. If you continue making those excuses, then you really don't want it because you haven't asked for help, you haven't asked for anyone, you're not looking for any resources, and it's just excuses. Let it go because you don't really want it.
The brain has an important part of this. In the book, you talk about how the brain works and different brain patterns. Explain that to me, please.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. You know, the brain is such a magnificent piece of organ, or can I say equipment. It's just a fascinating thing. And I spent many years studying how the brain really works. And I realized that there are three parts of our brain. And basically, these three parts run us. You know, each brain performs different functions and has different purposes. Let me give you those three parts of the brain. One is, most people know we have the primitive brain, which is sometimes referred to as the reptilian brain. It's the oldest part of our brain is the primitive brain, or the reptilian brain. It's what kept us alive as human beings for thousands of years. The next part of our brain is called the limbic brain, sometimes known as the mammalian brain or the emotional brain. Again, this is the second oldest part of our brain. It's very, very powerful, and it has a very powerful part to play on how, in terms of how we think. I'm going to talk about that in a moment. And the third part is the neocortex, or the human brain, and the neocortex being closest to our frontal lobe. It's responsible for advanced levels of thinking and skills such as analyzing or speech. And so if I go back to the primitive brain, it's what kept us alive. It's the fight or flight, freeze response. When we, as our ancestors would have come across a wild animal, now what do I do? Do I fight so I have something to eat, or do I run from this scene and get away from it, or do I freeze and this thing will eat me? So it's a survival. The survival part of our brain. And also, it's very powerful in the sense that a lot of you would have heard of the term reticular activating system. And that reticular activating system stems from this part of our brain. So it's very, very valuable that the reticular activating system is when we are in search of something, we really want it, and we've decided this is what we want. Like somebody says, I want to own a red BMW 7 Series. All of a sudden, they start seeing that type of car around, because now that's what they program into their mind. So that part of our brain filters out things that it doesn't regard as relevant, because it's trying to keep us alive. So the limb, is this making sense so far?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it is. You're using some words that I'm not sure I understand. Like, I'm having to make sure I'm spelling them right. Like the limbic is L-I-M-B-I-C, right?
Well, you got it. You got it. Exactly. You got it. So give me one second. Yeah. So I was talking about the limbic brain. And the limbic brain It's the emotional brain. It's the emotional part of our brain. It links to the primitive brain, and its purpose is to generate emotions. So often when I'm teaching people how to generate more money, more income, more wealth, I ask them to set a goal, but also emotionalize it. What is it going to look like? What is it going to feel like when I achieve that, when I have that level of income? So, but the limbic brain also contains the fear system, and it's there to detect danger, and it reacts constantly. And it causes us to behave in ways that increases our chances of survival. And so, you know, Charles Darwin many years ago believed that emotions are adaptations that allow both humans and animals to survive and reproduce. So they motivate us, it motivates us into taking actions. So that's the emotional part of our brain, and also looking for internal signals constantly. The neocortex, which I talked about early on, is the newest part of our brain from an evolutionary point. Scientists say it's about 2.6 million years old. And that, as humans, we've advanced so much that it's our thinking abilities, our reasoning, our language, our social interactions come from that neocortex. So when I talk about these parts of our brain, how does that relate to money? You see, when our older parts of our brains are triggered, they completely override the dreams and the goals of the neocortex. So, Jim, imagine someone says, I want to own and live in this $2 million house. Now, that's coming from the neocortex. That's what the goal they've set. They can see the dream.
Right.
However, the older part of the brain says, kicks in and says, no, you're not going to be safe. You're going to lose your money. And it overrides all the rational thoughts. And so most people think they are in control of what they're doing. However, if the brain, if not managed, is what's running the whole show. So I go deeper into the book and say, understand how these things work, so you can override when these things come up and actually go for what you really want.
In the book, you list all of the seven thoughts of the wealth, or the mindsets of the wealthy. And then the next chapter is called The Next Step. And you've alluded to some of that, reaching out to others for help and things like that. But we only have a couple minutes left, Max, so this makes sense. Give us the next step. Some of it might be repetitious, as I just said, but we've changed our mind. We're now thinking better. Now what do we do? Now what are the next action steps?
Right. The next action step is very much then to decide, okay, now I understand how the brain works. Now I understand I've got to set a goal in terms of what I really, really want and stop thinking negatively. The next step is to decide on which vehicle or which particular wealth generation vehicle you're going to use. And for some people, it's going to be start a business. Get my business underway, understanding how my brain works, and I'm going to make that business a success. Or it's going to be, I'm going to learn about investing. I'm going to invest in stocks or cryptocurrencies or real estate property. There are hundreds of ways to invest. So if you want wealth, what you need to understand is that wealth is not going to, often it's not going to come from a job. It's going to be coming from something that you create that allows you to be wealthy. So you're going to create a product or a service, and you're going to get it to the market, and you're going to sell it, or you are going to invest some of your money, and you're going to invest in a clever way because you know how to do it, and that's going to generate your wealth for you. For me, for example, it's not just one vehicle. Over the last 20 years, I've invested in various vehicles that create wealth for me ongoing, including real estate property, including businesses, including online information products that I have, and books, and many, many more. So the last step is the vehicle that you're going to use to create your wealth.
Fantastic. Mac, how do we find out more? Follow you online, all of that, please.
Yeah, sure. I mean, easiest way is to go to macatram.com. That's M-A-C ATTRAM.com. There's free information there, free business quizzes there as well. Reach out to me. I can more than happy to help you move forward, whoever's listening in. Thank you very much, Jim.
Fantastic. Mac, thank you. Congratulations on the book, and I hope it continues to sell well for you.
Thank you, Jim. I really appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
And we will be right back.
Bye.
Well, that's a wonderful question, actually, Jim.
Oh my gosh, I love the opportunity to do this. Thank you, Jim.
Wow, that's a great one.
You know, that is a phenomenal question.
That's a great question, and I don't have a great answer.
That's a great question.
Oh, that is such a loaded question, and that's actually a really good question.
School for Startups Radio.
We are back and still very appreciative that you are with us. Very excited to introduce a really interesting story. I did not know about all of the things I'm going to share with you. Please welcome Chris Homewood. He is the chief executive officer of a company called Channel Control Merchants. My understanding is they get all of the stuff that we return after Christmas and make sure that it doesn't end up in a landfill, and instead they sell it. And because of that, we get less junk in the landfill. Chris, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Jim. Thanks so much for the intro and hello from New York City. I'm at the National Retail Federation's big show here today, but great to spend some time with you.
Did I explain it correctly, what you're doing, Chris?
Yeah, you nailed it. You're hired. This is really the model that we have and where we fit in the world of retail.
All right, so where are you getting your stuff? What is the bulk of the merchandise? Is it clothes?
Yeah, great question. So if you think about returns in general in retail, it's about $800 billion. So there's a lot of it. And what we get is an assortment of whatever the customer returns. So we work with 17 of the top 100 retailers, both online as well as brick and mortar omnichannel, and we get returns from all of them, including excess and overstock, which is inventory that they couldn't sell or didn't sell or was out of season. So we get all kinds of stuff, anything from home, domestics, hardware, apparel, men's, women's, kids. We run the whole gamut of inventory.
All right, and what do you do with it?
So, our role is to help retailers do a couple of things. We have three tenets that we use when we go out to our partners. We talk about recovery, transparency, and sustainability. There is a return for this. It's expensive to process returns. So we're helping retailers, get some more money back for their returns. We talk about transparency and that, we're able to communicate with our retail partners exactly where their inventory is, and that feeds to the last tenant, which is that sustainability. So we process it in our warehouses, and then we move it to our 100 stores. We've got stores in Canada and stores in the U.S., and mostly in underserved markets. And, we resell it out at anywhere between 40 to 90% off, so you get great inventory at a great bargain. And, who doesn't want a great deal right now?
But these are your stores that you sell the merchandise?
That's correct. Yeah. So our
we're
in Texas, Arkansas, Tennessee, and then Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, and Florida. And then we've got stores outside of Calgary and then outside of the Toronto market as well up in Canada. And so this is all owned. We know where the inventory is. The inventory moves to our own system. So we always know where it is. And we know that, the inventory doesn't go to a landfill, and we report that back to our retail partners.
And what are the stores called? Are they called Channel Control? I doubt it.
Yeah. So you'll never forget the name once I tell you. We're called Dirt Cheap. We have the Dirt Cheap stores, and we have Treasure Hunt, which is our brand up in Canada, and then Dirt Cheap Building Supplies, which is another one of our brand. But it really signifies our value proposition. No mistaking what we do.
No, there is not, Chris.
Yeah. Yep.
And the transparency piece is important because if you're not transparent, you don't get the credit for it not going in the landfill. Is that correct? It all comes down to getting the government credit? Is that what, am I right on that?
Well, to some degree, the government credit, but more importantly is this is about reputation management and branding too. So KPMG just put a survey, some survey results out that 88% of retail leaders are looking at ESG, the S being sustainability, as being as important or more important going forward. So when you think about sustainability, is it's not just something that, you know, is nice to have, it's a must have, but more importantly with retail and where we sit in this equation is that this is how we can solve it, right? This inventory can have a second life. It's just creating that pathway forward. So the transparency element gives us the credibility. And then, as I mentioned, we view ourselves as a partner to our retailers. We can tell them and provide them with reporting that they can publish in their ESG reports that essentially proves that what they're doing is right and just and good. And, you know, we can show exactly where their inventory went and that it's not going to a landfill. You know, it's not being burned. So that really is the biggest part of this as far as, you know, it's, basically making sure we're doing right by the earth and by these communities.
What about, Chris, dirt cheap local, where the items never leave the mall? It gets returned to Saks at the mall, and someone at Saks walks it down to your pop-up somewhere mm-hmm. else in the mall, and you sell it a week after it's returned, 2 days after it's returned.
Mm-hmm.
Is that sort of is that possible? Could we get to that point?
We could, and that's what's really exciting about this space. You know, we get truckloads of inventory from our partners. We move it through our system in about a week, and then push it out to our retail stores. You know, there is a really exciting way to think about what this could be. And you know, I talked about this, that there's not a lot of action in this space yet. So we recognize that we're just one piece of this. And I think the more people that talk about this and the more people that are interested in this, you know, solving an $800 billion problem is going to take more than just us. So we're happy to have a voice in it.
Well, I love that attitude. That is a great attitude. Tell me about the show that you're at this week in New York.
Yeah, so NRF, you know, the largest retail conference, there's three floors at the convention center. It's this great mixture of ideas, innovation, celebration, and it's really collecting, some of the best retailers, some of the best technologists, and continuing to look for improving the shopping experience, improving sustainability, improving the customer experience. And so it's a really fun, you know, there's a little bit of a taste of the future there, and as well as, you know, some reconnecting with friends. You know, retail is one big family. So it's a great celebration of shopping and everything related to it.
And if we do get a recession, so we would assume retail would be down, is that therefore good for channel control merchants?
Yeah, you know what, if you think about returns and some of the inventory that's out there, so one out of every four items that's bought online is returned, and that's where, you know, there's a lot of that inventory that comes into our space. You know, part of this service, right, I would never wish ill on a retail partner by any means, so this is kind of going back to those three tenets: recovery, transparency, and sustainability. How do we help with that recovery? If we are able to partner with our retailers effectively and provide them, you know, additional income through this end-of-life inventory or through inventory that is excess, you know, that can help the whole equation. We can certainly provide customers a really great bargain. We're giving them this inventory at 40 to 90% off. And so, yeah, there's a great recession story for us, or an inflation story if you want to think about it that way. But again, you know, our purpose and why we exist is really to be a partner and to be part of the sustainability story and to help our retail partners. But for sure, you know, there is going to be a demand, I think, in people wanting to save some money. And, you know, who doesn't want to save a few bucks these days?
English literature for your major, Chris?
It is. Not even sure where to take that one.
Well, you know, it teaches the rest of us what you end up doing with an English major. You end up running a retail store. But I really wanted to congratulate you and thank you for your service, the ROTC, and of course your years with the Marines. I wanted to point that out, let everyone know that you ended up, a major in the Marines.
Yes.
So thank you for your service, sir.
My pleasure. It's a privilege to serve, and I was fortunate enough to be able to study something that I was interested in, and then got some of the best leadership tutelage I could possibly ask for in the Marines. So I'm fortunate to be a recipient of a lot more than I gave. So thank you for that, though. I appreciate it.
Chris, where can we go shopping dirt cheap? And tell us where we can find out more about CCM.
Yeah, absolutely. So CCM, you can find us at ccmllc.com for our dirt cheap stores and locations. You can go to ilovedirtcheap.com. And as I mentioned, our stores are in the Southeast and then up in Canada. And, we're looking.
Folks, we lost the last second of Chris there. But anyway, he was saying goodbye. Thanks a lot for being with us today. We're out of time, but back tomorrow. Be safe, everyone. Bye now.